How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan, and that's where I'm going to start this podcast. Today's show is brought to you, by the way, by SeatGeek. As always, find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silverscreen, and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. In a bit, I'm going to talk to a buddy of mine, Kirk Henderson of Mavs Moneyball. But before I do anything, talk about anything basketball-related, I wanted to... Harrison is not going to be on the show this week. And I wanted to send a few kind words out his way. He works insanely hard, and he does things that, frankly, is way above market value. And it takes a toll. And he said, "Hey, man, I need a break. I need a week." He took a break from Silver Screen as well. And, you know, he said, "I needed a break. I need to rebound a bit, and I need to rehab psychologically a little bit." And I want to make sure that I and everybody listening to this right now sends some kind thoughts, prayers, if you believe in that kind of thing. Just send some positive vibes out there to Harrison while he deals with this. He'll be back again in a week. He'll be back again on next Monday's show. Harrison, if you're listening, you are my best friend in this industry. You are like a brother to me in this thing. And it's been incredible to go on this ride with you and have the success that the show has had. And we wouldn't be here without you. But at the end of the day, there is nothing anywhere near as important to me and important, period, as your mental and, I mean, just frankly, your health. So get better, buddy, and we will be able to talk again. I'll be able to give you a hard time again when you get back. But again, like if you're listening to this right now, we usually open up with some Lakers stuff, and I'm sorry if this is kind of if this feels self-important. But really this, my number one priority, the thing I care the most about in this industry is that Harrison makes it and that Harrison and I, you know, make it together. And this industry can wear people down. And, again, send those positive vibes out there to them. I'm going to quickly talk about, you know, awkwardly segue into some Lakers stuff because I know no other way to segue. In a bit, I'm going to talk to Kirk Henderson. We start with Lonzo Ball's shoe stuff. We talk about Lonzo Ball and Dennis Smith Jr. We talk about Kobe and Dirk and the pay cut stuff. And you know, should millionaires take pay cuts to benefit billionaires? It's a fairly brief conversation, 25 minutes or so. But Kirk was great with this time. I'm out here in Tahoe, actually, recording from vacation. Before I get to that conversation, a quick couple notes about the Lakers. Training camp is starting within a few weeks, and they have continued to fill out their training camp roster. They got, they signed Briante Weber to a partially guaranteed deal. He's going to be going up against Tyler Ennis and Alex Caruso for playing time in the as a backup point guard. So that'll be fun to watch in training camp. You're going to see guys, look, Zubats and Thomas Bryant are going to be competing for minutes in the front court. And what I wanted to hit on really quickly before we get to the Kirk Henderson conversation is it's really cool to watch the Lakers as an organization basically put it out there that, look, if you're going to make it on this team and earn minutes, you're going to have to compete for them. And that's not obviously a Lakers-specific thing, but that hasn't necessarily always been the case. There's been this kind of undertone of, you know, veterans get the first bite at the apple, and then if they lose their spot, they lose their spot. It sounds to me like with this roster going in, because there isn't, you know, some crazy age disparity, not including Luol Deng being 37,000 years old. But aside from that, you have a lot of guys who are on fairly equal footing, all trying to get minutes. And all that's going to create is you're going to see, you know, with pressure makes diamonds. And I'm not saying that the Lakers are going to find any kind of diamond in the rough, because it's impossible to predict that kind of thing. But I do think that this training camp is going to be really interesting, because you're going to, you know, whoever does earn these minutes, you'll know that they earned them. You'll know that they competed day in, day out to be able to play behind Lonzo Ball. And hell, if somebody consistently shows out and gives Lonzo a hard time to be able to start, I don't think there's any chance in hell that Lonzo doesn't start the year. But, you know, the hope is that somebody will be breathing down his neck night in, night out, practice in, practice out, pushing him to say, look, man, I am more than happy to take this opportunity if you give it to me by not playing up to your potential. And that's a great place to start for a young team. That was always my knock on the last head coach, that, you know, Ronnie Price was just assumed as the starting point guard, even though Jordan Clarkson at the time was frankly a better player. You saw guys get minutes late in the game because he said, you know, rookies didn't win games, which is true to a certain extent, but it's not like he was playing veterans who had an incredible track record of winning basketball games as well. So this is something definitely to keep an eye on as the season goes along. We're going to get to Kirk Henderson here in a second. But before we get to that, quick break to talk about our friends over at SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to buy tickets online. Jen and I just went to a Dodgers game and got an incredible offer through SeatGeek. They had a great deal, and it jumped off the page because one of the first things you see when you say you're going to buy tickets is this chart that shows these deal scores. And there's a very big green dot. If based on their data, it's a good deal. I clicked on that deal. I clicked on that rate, and it wound up being, you know, five rows back for a very reasonable price. So Jen and I took advantage of that and had a great time doing so. We scanned the tickets at the gate. There was no problem pulling up those tickets. The entire purchase was done in about a minute or so, and we got to enjoy a Dodgers game. Unfortunately, the Dodgers lost, but it was still a great time, and SeatGeek is helping me convert Jen into a Dodgers fan, which is always hugely beneficial to my TV watching habits. So thanks to SeatGeek for that. Thanks to SeatGeek for their support. Use their promo code LOLAKERS to get $20 back using your first purchase using the application. SeatGeek is the smartest and fastest way to buy tickets online. Let's get to this conversation I have with Kirk. It's a lot of fun. And again, send those positive vibes out there to Harrison. We'll be back again on Friday. All right, I'm joined now by Kirk Henderson at Kirk Serious Face on Twitter. He's of MavsMoneyball.com and, more importantly, the Basket Bros group DM, where all kinds of craziness goes on. Last time I had you on, Kirk, I believe I had you on to talk about Chandler Parsons, and I think literally the next day he signed in Memphis.
Oh, it was later that night. we finished recording the podcast, and then it was already pointless, so it was one of those things where I'm sure you put it out and nobody listened to it because there was nothing useful there.
Yeah, we talked at length about, like, what impact he could have on the Lakers and, like, how he would be good for the kids, and then hours later,
he signed arguably one of the worst contracts in the NBA right now. That, I mean, at least with him, though, when he signed that deal, it was one of those, like, if he stays healthy kind of things. It wasn't an immediate, like, when the Lakers signed the Mozgov and the Deng contracts, people knew immediately, like, this isn't going to end well. Chandler at least has a chance to kind of get some value back on that deal. So you got that.
One day.
Maybe. I'm trying to give some positive vibes out there because of all the craziness that's going on all over the place. But we won't talk about that. We are going to talk, though, about Lonzo Ball and Dennis Smith Jr. because I think them being the opposites of each other on the basketball court makes for an interesting dynamic as their careers move forward. And then we're going to take that conversation and talk about other opposite relationships and how Dirk is handling the end of his career versus how Kobe is handling the end of, or how Kobe handled the end of his career. And one, the effect on the organization that that has, and two, how players are kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't when it comes to analysis. So those are the two main things we're going to talk about. The first place we're going to start, though, is whether or not you've bought your ZO2s yet, and you know, if you're wearing a Lonzo Ball Lakers jersey right now.
You know, I'm not, and it's funny that you say that because, like, I am a shoe person, and the entire thought of a guy with Lonzo's potential playing on shoes that are not specifically built for him mm-hmm. is horrifying to me.
Yep.
I don't even know. Like, I understand, like the marketing buzz, and I still very much hope he signs with, like, an actual brand. Because, like, I've been – as I've aged into my 30s, I start to have these really stupid foot and back problems, and it mm-hmm. makes me so cognizant of, like, taking care of your feet and your legs early on. And, like, wearing the – I mean, the ZO2s are ugly, A. But then it's like, the, you know, they could have been made in the house by the other two Ball brothers for all we know.
I think Adam Sandler made them in The Cobbler, that, like, terrible Netflix movie that he put out there. But I do think you raise an interesting point here because, like, as we saw with Grant Hill and Fila, right? Like, when you don't have the right technology and given the amount of technology that goes into these shoes, like, you know, people are going to say, based on what you said, that these shoes weren't designed specifically for him. Like, they are technically custom shoes, but they didn't have, like, the basketball shoes have actual engineers working on them. Like, Under Armour has a staff of, you know, physical engineers that actually make sure that these, you know, will abide the laws of physics and benefit from them. And Steph Curry, as we've seen, you know, and as the Warriors have benefited from, his career has taken a positive turn that I don't think many saw coming. Grant Hill had the opposite effect on his feet because of those Filas. And I think last time I talked about this, whoever the guest was said that there was a tennis player who wore Fila, and Fila messed with his feet and kind of ruined his career as well. So I think it's really interesting what you're talking about regarding Lonzo Ball's feet and what damage he could potentially do to himself early in his career because these shoes were made by, you know, LeVar Ball in his garage.
Yeah, the first ankle sprain he has, that becomes a story for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it should. It definitely should. And, I mean, you saw it, I don't think I'd go so far as to say that there's a direct correlation, but Lonzo played better in non-ZO2 shoes while he was out there in Vegas.
Yes, he really did. Like, I actually think there's something to it. I mean, outside of the colorway of those hilarious what do you want to call it? Like the, it's almost like they're like Laffy Taffy, purple, Kobe's. Those were incredible. But he played really well in those shoes. Mm-hmm. And that just, I don't know, that matters to me. I'm a little superstitious, but that spoke to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll talk though about Dennis Smith Jr. Speaking of shoes, he signed his Under Armour deal. And I feel like Under Armour is like the perfect product for him. Like there's some partnerships that just make sense.
Well, it's interesting because he is just going to be one of these guys, I think, who kind of rides under the radar for a while.
Mm-hmm.
you know, both in terms of where he's playing in Dallas, which, you know, my squad is just so milquetoast and boring. Even with Dennis Smith, it's hard to really care about them because they're going to win like 35 games. Woohoo! But with him, he's just kind of I think he's going to be under the radar for a while because the West is really tough. So kind of signing with an under-the-radar shoe company makes a little bit of sense. I mean, they're really looking to get some more explosive athletes. I mean, I can't really – who else wears Under Armour besides Steph? I mean, they have to have more – they have to have a better people. But it's a good gamble for him, and it's a good gamble for them, because if he actually, you know, becomes something in the West, then that could really pay off long-term for both sides.
Yeah, and he's somebody who – look, like we talked about a second ago with Steph – given the amount of technology that went into his shoes. And like, I think they actually worked with him and taught him how to walk again. There's this really cool story on like, Steph, you need to, you know, I don't know if it's supinate or pronate, whatever he was doing, but he needed to put more weight evenly on his feet. And, you know, because of the way he was walking before and because of the design of the shoes that he was wearing before, that it was kind of doubling down on the incorrectness that he was walking and landing, and he kept turning his ankle, and then now, you know, he hasn't had ankle issues in quite some time. And look, if they put the same thought into Dennis Smith Jr. and with the freak athlete he is, like, I think he's going to win a dunk contest at some point in his career. And if he's wearing Under Armour shoes that, you know, look cool while he does it, and then if he has some success in the NBA and kind of carries the torch after Dirk rides off into the Dallas sunset, then, yeah, I think the partnership and all that works out really well. Talking about their actual games, though, Dennis Smith Jr. and Lonzo Ball, would you agree with my initial assessment that they're kind of like the opposites to each other in terms of playing style?
Well, both in terms of playing style and really where their careers went, because, I mean, Dennis Smith – was in initial high school rankings, Dennis Smith was higher than Lonzo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like Markel and Dennis Smith. And, you know, there's a little concern with him coming out of high school because he had torn his ACL. And to anyone who hasn't seen him play, he has a legitimate 48-inch vertical.
Yeah, it's insane.
And watching, you know, his hops remind you of Russell Westbrook. Like, he doesn't have that kind of power, but nobody does at that size. But he has this kind of, like, ability to levitate.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went to, you know, North Carolina State. Mm-hmm. And just that team just floundered. I think it was a coaching issue more than anything with him. And then that, you know, with 18-year-olds, I'm sure it can kind of compound into being, you know, when a bad situation becomes worse in a hurry. Whereas Lonzo, you know, the vision was there and people were interested in him mainly because of his dad's, you know, hype. But I don't think anybody really considered how good he was until after about 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, you know, within, you know, 5 to 10 games, he starts shooting up everybody's board and Smith falls off. Smith has a pretty terrible college career. And Lonzo is kind of hyped as understandably being, you know, the next great vision player in the NBA. Their athletic styles are very different because, you know, first, Smith is about 6'2". How tall is Lonzo? He's a 6'5", 6'6",
yeah,
right?
He's a big kid. That was the one thing when people were questioning whether or not he and D'Angelo Russell would work defensively. At least they could switch onto other, like, they could switch 1-2. Whereas,
well, and people misunderstand, like, size play, you know, just use LeBron as kind of the catch-all. His size allows him to see passes that a guy 5 inches shorter can't see.
Mm-hmm.
So Lonzo's size is going to do, you know, something similar for him, whereas Smith is, you know, 6'1" if we're lucky. I mean, I was taller than him in Vegas, and I'm 6'2". So, you know, that is just their games are a little bit different. Their sizes are different. They both do have really good range from distance, which is kind of fun. I don't know if Smith has his nobody really seems to have a mid-range game anymore. It's kind of, I'm going to be interested to see where Smith's game goes this year, because he's going to be playing in an offense that, you know, I think like a guy like Lonzo would also benefit from, in an offense that has a ton of space.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Carlisle made Seth Curry,
yeah,
a guy that people are talking about getting a big contract next year. And let me tell you, he's not that good. So, you know, putting a superstar level athlete and an offense with a lot of space, I'm really kind of excited to see what he does. And I bet in terms of like raw numbers, Lonzo's always going to have more assists, but I bet each guy kind of goes towards the 15 to 18 point range. Like Smith is going to be one of those guys with who fights for Lonzo for the rookie of the year if they both stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely think so. I think he's well positioned because it's Dallas. Like Dallas is going to outperform expectations, I think, in my opinion, because there aren't like nobody really has expectations with Dallas. It's just kind of like, oh, you know, they'll be a nice team. Dirk is getting ready to retire. You know, Carlisle will pull some magic tricks and they'll win, you know, 38 to 40 games or something, you know, whatever it would be. You say 35, in that kind of 35 to 40 range. And Dennis Smith Jr. is going to have a lot of those highlight plays that kind of stick in everybody's mind. And interestingly enough, like he'll do that with plays at the rim and crazy block shots or rebounds that a 6'1 guy shouldn't be able to get. And Lonzo's going to do the same thing. He's going to make these crazy plays that stick with people because, like, holy crap, where did that passing angle come from? Or how did he rack up, you know, 8.5 assists every single night for entire NBA season? And it's going to be fun to watch these two guys develop in the same conference. And I would say, you know, Smith has the opportunity to impact games more in a direct fashion, you know, with his own scoring and with things that he brings to the table individually. And it's going to make Dallas a better team because they have him on there. And then Lonzo's going to affect games in ways that I think most casual fans aren't going to be able to notice really well. But both guys, I think, like both franchises walked away from that draft high-fiving themselves that they got their guy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I never really was on a tank bandwagon for Dallas because I didn't really trust the front office to do the right thing with a high draft pick because, you know, Cuban has made it his understandable mission to give Dirk the best team possible, paired with the fact that I think that he has been a little more involved in the off-season acquisition stuff, both from free agent and draft, in the last since the Mavericks won the championship, than I would have liked. I mean, Donnie Nelson is an unbelievable talent evaluator. Anybody that doesn't know much about him, he's worth Googling. He was involved with the Yugoslavian Dream Team that basically gave the United States a run for their money in 1992. Like, the guy is just he's a basketball mind, and he's able to kind of pick people out of thin air, and in this draft, I really believe that he outmaneuvered Phil Jackson to getting Dennis
Absolutely.
Smith.
Absolutely,
because Nicotine up in New York is I saw him in the rookie stuff, and Knicks are gonna be mad about that pick. Not that the guy is a bad player; it's just Smith has that special thing to where he could be really good. You know, in a Stephon Marbury kind of way, but he's going to be somebody who gets butts in the seats to watch games, and that's just important in the NBA,
especially for Dallas, where, like, I don't know condescending way to say this, but like Dallas has always just kind of like existed.
Yeah, no, you know? I mean, since the last 4 years have been terribly boring. Yeah. We signed Harrison Barnes last year. I'm on the team, and. There was just nothing to talk about by game 40 because Harrison Barnes is Rudy Gay light. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just not particularly interesting or good. And so at least with like the Lakers, there's some fun and chaos and in being terrible and watching guys develop, because I've not had anybody to root for to develop in years. And so like having it, and with the NBA being so lead guard important now, it's just nice to have these guys that, you know, even if they're, you know, rookie seasons are going to be filled with a lot of chaos just because 82 games is a lot. It's going to be fun. And like, I'm looking forward to the season in a way that I haven't in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and that matters to me, you know, like that. I think, especially in NBA Twitter, it's really easy to just fall into faux GM mode where all that matters to you is what's best for building this team. But really, none of us actually play a role in actually building the team. So sometimes it's nice to get back to thinking about, hey, what would I actually like to root for? Like, what would I what would I actually like to watch? So, like, that was one of my issues with the Brook Lopez trade, is that, like, he's a good player. He's a good NBA player. But do I really want to watch a Brook Lopez team?
No, because with the way he plays, he's going to be a little bit ball dominant. Because if you're not – otherwise, you're not using him right. Because that's kind of his best asset is the ability to get buckets.
Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's just like teams that had, like, Al Jefferson a couple of years ago, or, you know, if Enes Kanter gets moved and he becomes, like, the centerpiece of these team or of any team, one, that team's going to suck. And two, it's just going to be really boring to watch, because it's like, all right, dump the ball into Enes Kanter and watch him – make a jump hook and then go back on defense and get roasted, you know?
Yep.
Like, it's just, for me personally, seeing as this is entertainment and I have to watch 82 of these games, I'd like to watch a product that I actually would enjoy watching. We kind of alluded to Dallas kind of existing, and you talked about what the organization has done to try to put the best team around Dirk that they possibly can. And then Dirk has helped by taking these pay cuts, and Kobe did the opposite. You know, like, one of my saddest days in sports fandom was when Kobe, you know, they asked him about taking a pay cut, and he was like, no, why would I do that? And it was kind of – it was the same offseason that LeBron and Carmelo were both going to be available, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, this could actually happen. The Lakers might actually have a chance at these guys, and then Kobe takes 2 years, $48 million, and out goes that opportunity. And yet – I can't necessarily blame him for doing that, because, like, I can't knock an athlete for saying, wait, why should a millionaire take a pay cut to benefit a billionaire? And you know, Dirk has gone the other route, and I almost feel bad for Dirk, because he takes these pay cuts for an organization that we just talked about just has kind of existed. And that's what I mean when I say that an athlete can be damned if they do, damned if they don't take a pay cut. Because at the end of the day, too, like, you have fans that are lining up to laugh at Dirk for taking a pay cut, and you have fans that are lining up to call Kobe selfish for taking all the money he can get. So, like, if you were an athlete, how would you handle that situation?
Well, it's kind of weird, because Dirk has basically taken three pay cuts during the course of his career. And, you know, the first one, which was before the 2010 season, made some sense, because the salary cap then was to the point where I think the salary cap was in, like, the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. And so, like, in order to – and there also was not really stringent penalties for going over the cap. So, like, teams could take on just all sorts of salary if you really wanted to assume the risk, which is what Dallas eventually did and when they won the championship. So – that one made a little bit of sense. The one after the championship, I kind of get, because they were still trying to be competitive. Then last year, when after all of their free agency plans for, like, the third year in a row fell through, he signed a 2-year deal with the second year being a team option for $50 million. Mm-hmm. So he got paid $25 million last year. And so the team opted out of the year this year. And the reason he signs these 2-year deals is because he doesn't actually know when he wants to retire. He could theoretically play 2 or 3 more years. Mm-hmm. And what they want to do with him is give him, you know, the option to retire without it becoming a retirement tour, which I think is important for him. But I don't understand why this year, when he re-signed for very little money, because the NBA salary cap allows teams to re-sign players and go, or there in order to keep their own players, go over the cap to keep them. So he basically took this deal as a favor to Cuban, and even us at, like, Mavs fans who are kind of cap conscious didn't understand why he did it, because it made, in some instances, it made some sense, but they could sign, he could be the 15th guy that they sign when they finally ink him to his contract in order to juggle things under the salary cap, and it really wouldn't matter.
Because especially while they're, like, trying to deal with the Nerlens Noel situation as well.
Right, because you have to pay people. Like, the frustrating thing that we talk about as fans is, like, even at a salary floor is still 90% of the cap. So if the cap is $100 million, you have to pay guys $90 million of it. So it's not like there's all this money, that's just getting left on the table. So it's very odd that Dallas is doing or that Dirk is doing this for the Mavs. I mean, maybe there's probably going to be something where he joins the organization afterwards as some kind of vice president, the way Michael Finley has done, And there's, you know, he gets paid whatever on the back end, you know, some kind of, you know, dark money, black budget figure. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's a little strange.
Yeah.
It's I used to kind of get annoyed at the whole, you know, why would you help make a billionaire richer line? But in this instance, it's legitimately accurate. It's not like he's taking a pay cut to pay on, to play on a prime team like Kevin Durant did. He's taking a pay cut to take a pay cut for his, you know, massive owner friend. I mean, the only difference with the Kobe situation, and you know, I could be wrong here, is I think, again, the order in which they signed him to that extension still doesn't make any sense to me. Because if there would have been like a promise on the table, you know, maybe he just didn't trust the organization, but he signed that dang thing in season, and that really tied y'all's hands for future moves.
Well, look,
that's what doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he signed it pretty quickly, but what hurt was him publicly acknowledging, like publicly addressing the speculation about whether or not he would take a pay cut. Like you're talking about with Dirk, he's taking this pay cut now for literally the hell of it. He's like basically saying, I've made a lot of money, and then go ahead and take the rest of whatever I might be taking cubes.
Right.
But like with Kobe, it legitimately hurt the franchise. His contract legitimately hurt the franchise. So it is tough to analyze, you know, Kobe and Dirk alongside each other, because these things don't happen in a vacuum. But just in general, like my beef is, if one of the key roles for any owner is I have to put up the capital to keep a really good team together, or to put together a really good team, and a player lets them out of that key role, then it's kind of helping out the owner in a way that I'm not really comfortable with them being helped out. But if there is like with Dirk, a role for him moving forward in the organization, that, you know, that payout is actually going to, you know, kind of grow on itself in the years to come, then okay, I kind of get it. I don't know if that's legal, but I guess I kind of get it.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's all very odd. I mean, the Dirk and Duncan kind of fall into this category where neither one, you know, really had much in the way of life outside. Well, life that they were interested in talking about outside of basketball. Mm-hmm. And Dirk in particular, like, has two in his entire career. He's had two endorsements, a small deal with Nike and a deal with a bank in his hometown. He doesn't have an agent. That's one of the strangest things that, you know, I keep taking for granted. He basically negotiates these things in good faith with his shooting coach, Holger, helping out now and again. It's just a very unique situation, but I still wish that he kind of would have taken them for another $25 million, because, you know, I, as a Mavs fan, and you know, we could always talk about this down the road if you have me on again, the free agency plan is unbelievably risky and can waste entire years of a franchise.
Absolutely.
And Dallas did just that after, you know, they had a championship team, and then they let the heart of the team go and chased waterfalls. And it just, you know, it basically wasted 2 years of Dirk's post prime. And it's really hard for me to forgive that.
Yeah, I would feel the exact same way. We are out of time though. I really appreciate it. You said, like, if I bring you on again, I'm going to have you on again.
Well, it's usually my fault. I'm the one who can't come on because we're three time zones apart.
Well, we'll make it work no matter what. But thank you very much for coming on such short notice as well, and filling in for Harrison. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sure thing.
All right.
All right, that was Kirk Henderson of Mavs Moneyball. Very appreciative that he would spend some time with me talking on the phone before he had to put his son to bed. A lot of fun conversation there. He's a really smart dude. So, and he and I think about things kind of differently. So it's kind of fun to have conversations with somebody who challenges you intellectually. So that was at Kirk Serious Face on Twitter. He's from MavsMoneyball.com. I am Anthony Irwin. I will be back again on Friday. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Use that promo code LOLakers to get $20 back off of your first purchase using the application. Find all of our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Keep leaving those five-star ratings, and please keep leaving show ideas, because we are now in the middle of August and there is almost nothing to talk about. So we'd appreciate any help we can get there. We'll talk to everybody again on Friday.
You've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate, and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.